And welcome to Tales from the Long Box podcast, episode 12?
Is it really? Wow.
Yeah, I think it is. Wow, that's hard to believe. But, today we are going to be talking about, we're picking not necessarily our favorite creator, but one of our favorite creators, and talking about their body of work, talk about some of our favorite books of theirs that they have done, or at least ones that have affected us in some way, and so things like that. So before we get started, anybody want to talk about stuff that you've read or?
You know what came out this week, which was really good, and I grabbed a copy of it just because I like the artist, but Wolverine and the X-Men, #1.
I heard good things about that one.
I actually bought that, too. I bought 4 whole Marvel books this week.
Hello.
And accidentally forgot a couple of DC ones. I was just in a crazy, crazy at the comic shop this week. So, yeah, I haven't read that yet, but I looked at some of the stuff about Schism and how, you know, what happened to get to where they were at, and interesting stuff.
It is interesting. I don't necessarily agree with the way they got to where they are with the book, but I
tend to agree with that.
I think that some of the characterization choices coming up to it were a little wonky, but I really, really enjoyed that first issue, and I'm interested to see where they go with it. Now, will I pick up the sister book, the Uncanny X-Men #1? We'll see. Maybe just as a #1, I may do it. But it was a lot of fun. I highly, highly recommend. Again, it's not a lot of blown up stuff, other than blown up the school. Mm-hmm.
Wow! Spoilers.
So what's the setup then? Wolverine's opening a school, is that right?
Well, he's reopening. Well, basically, I don't know how far you're into the mutant stuff. I mean, I haven't been reading it, but I've been a little bit. There was an event, and there's like barely 200 mutants on the total planet.
Yeah.
And at one point, Magneto pulled down his asteroid that was from that old X-Men run that Claremont and Jim Lee started.
Asteroid M.
Yeah. Pull it down. Well, it fell in the water. He pulled it back up, and they made a sovereign nation called Utopia, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they've been – all the mutants have been living there. Well
– outside of San Francisco, by the way.
San Francisco Bay. Well, at one point, there was some kind of battle, and I guess there was a bunch of X-Men out there there, and – Cyclops pulled in a bunch of the teenagers and kids there to fight, and apparently to, you know, defend the island. And Wolverine apparently took offense to that happening and decided to split away from the X-Men and go back to Xavier's school and start that school back up. So, quote unquote, kids could be kids.
Yeah. And they mentioned it in the books, is it's a little naive to think that, you know, putting all these mutants in one place, especially Gray Malk and Lane outside of what's that town?
Westchester?
Thank you. God, all these years of reading X-Men, I couldn't remember that. Yeah. Wolverine, I mean, it's like I said, I think it's a little naive of Wolverine, the character, thinking that they won't get attacked and get blowed up real good. And I also think it's a tad bit out of character that he would have a problem putting teenagers into the fight, because I would swear there were stories in the past where he would insist that like characters like Kitty Pryde, it was necessary for her to learn how to protect herself, and that, you know, she'd never be safe. But I could be misremembering. But in any case, it was good. It was well written. There was touches of comedy in there. It's Chris Bacalo doing the art on it, so obviously it's a little left of center, or maybe right of center. I don't know. It's off center. How about that?
Yeah.
I didn't want anybody to take that as a political statement.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's good. It really is. I'm hoping Chris Backlow can maintain. I know that he has some issues with maintaining a monthly schedule in the past. And I don't know what Marvel's opinion, like DC, of, you know, do the monthly or you're out kind of thing. I don't know if that's a mandate at Marvel, but in any case, that is my you asked something this week that jumped off the
shelf. That's a good point. We haven't talked about Marvel that much on here, and I'm probably going to be getting the Uncanny too, at least the first one. And I think I've said it on here before. I know I have on Facebook that I kind of miss the X-Men stuff. And, you know, I've been wanting kind of a jump on point for a while. And, you know, this is an obvious one. I'm going to at least look at it. Anyway, it should be interesting to see how that plays out. Now, whether I stick with it or not, I'm not sure. Because I have a feeling that they finally overdid the whole X-Men 47 titles thing, and I think they talked about it on the Legion podcast a little bit, how, you know, they're kind of doing that with the Avengers now, you know, where there's Avengers Milwaukee and or whatever.
2, 4, 6. No, sorry. Shlemiel, Shlemazel.
But anyway, so we'll see how that goes.
It will be interesting. And I think that they're trying really hard to create a continuity and maintain it, because all the books are going to reflect this. There's I read on part of my research for my creator this week. I found an interesting quote that actually some books can opt in and opt out of being part of events. So I didn't realize that. I thought that, you know, hey, we're having an event. New York is blowing up. You sure as hell better reflect it in your book somewhere. And apparently they don't have to.
That has a lot to do with how good their book is selling. If their book isn't selling, then they probably, you know. But I see where you're getting at.
Yeah, and I think that they're gonna try really hard to have all the X books, and that includes Wolverine and his 15 titles, and I think Deadpool as well, and his 15 titles be involved and reflect this. And I know, again, the creator I picked this week, it talks, you know, one of his books is going to be impacted by it as well. Mm-hmm. It's a good first issue. I think that I don't think it's going to sell in the numbers a lot of the DC number one sold.
No.
There's not the hype around it, which they easily put there. But
yeah,
I wish them luck, and I'll be there for the time being.
Yeah. Like I was saying, I miss the X-Men, and I might even start picking up some of these too. I don't know. We'll see. Because right at the moment, I've been picking up almost all the new DC stuff, even except for maybe two, Voodoo and Hawk and Dove, but I've gotten number twos of all the rest of them just because out of curiosity.
See, Voodoo, I wanted to pick that up this week and I couldn't find it, and I forgot the title, and all I could remember was it was that Super Stripper story, and I wanted the second part and I didn't want to tell.
The cover is showing her with the Fed badge, so that Super Stripper thing's over. So
I know it's over, but that's all I could hang my hat on. So when I was at the shop, I was like, "Do I ask for the stripper comic? No, I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to wait till Wednesday, and by that point, it will have sunk in my head, the title, and then I'll pick it up."
Okay, well, that's good. That's good then.
You could have ended up with a copy of Omaha the Cat Dancer.
I could have ended up with a lot of things, I'm sure.
Yeah, you could have. That could have been very uncomfortable for everyone involved. So
brown paper bag, indeed.
But
sure, we're a respectable store here. We don't sell that kind of trash.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. Yes, we do.
Yeah, come around back and we'll take care of that.
Oh, you mean Catwoman, or did you mean Red Hood?
But I'm really enjoying. I'm way behind. I was finishing up my comic writing class and got my folks are in town this weekend. So I'm real. I got like a big stack, but the ones I've got a chance to read, I'm really enjoying the number two. So far, so good.
Me too. I got to pick them up this week, so I got all caught up on my Legion, my Flash, my
I got caught up on some
Flash. I really liked it. It was a good one.
It looks good.
Yeah, I liked it. It's a good Flash story, and it's a good Barry Allen story too. It makes me remember why I liked the character. Because for the longest time, I was Wally.
Right.
And,
I'm sure all three of us grew up with Wally. So.
Totally.
Yeah. Barry died in the crisis, and that was, I never really had any exposure to him. So, yeah, I can see, I'm getting used to Barry. So we'll go from there.
Well, I had liked Barry. I mean, I read him as a kid, and then I was happy with him to be off stage for a while. But I'd forgotten just how much I enjoy Barry too.
Barry Allen. My only Barry Allen was in Justice League, so I had no affinity one way or the other. Yeah. So yeah, like you guys, I was a Wally West guy, and not even so much that until a little bit of the Mike Baron, and then when Mark Waid came on, of course.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And then Jeff Johns, his first go around, not his later go arounds, but his first go around was
huge. I hated his take on that at first, but I really fell in love with it as it went along. So.
I think, and again, not to totally derail this topic today, but I think that when Jeff Johns came on board, he also brought, correct me if I'm wrong, but he also brought a new art style with him. Not with him per se, but the editors brought new art on with as well. So that was also very jarring. I think it was Scott Collins, or maybe it wasn't Scott Collins initially, but.
No, I don't think it was, but that's what it ended up with, yeah. And I really fell in love with his work during that.
But boy, did that take that took a little time to catch on. I was like, oh my god, this is ugly, doesn't fit a speed book, but then it did.
Yeah, well, and I felt the same way with Scott McDaniel on Nightwing. When they started Nightwing with Chuck Dixon, I didn't like his work at first, and it took, and by the time, I'd read it for a while, I still love his work. So
you're getting some right now, I think.
Yep, Static Shock, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Which I haven't read yet. I still need to read that. So number two, I mean.
Yeah, I haven't read number two either, but that's the main reason I got that book, was because of his art. And he was going to be writing part of it at least, which that will be changing eventually, but that's another episode, I think.
Yeah, we should revisit it. Number six with all the different books and see who's still around.
Good idea. That's a good idea.
Totally.
Okay. Well, let's get started. Who wants to go first?
Oh, I'll go first.
All right.
So, as you noted, these aren't necessarily our favorite creators, but I think they're creators that we have read stories by that have stuck with us. And mine was Peter David, or Peter Allen David, or as he goes, all the time, he's PAD or PAD online or in various places. He has been doing comics for, good Lord, it looks to me like about 30 years now, on and off. He started in advertising for Marvel. That was his first comic book gig, was doing advertising. And he really wanted to write, and he figured that was his door into the business. And as it turned out, he was right. He kept submitting stuff and kept being turned down. And one of their excuses was they couldn't have the cross. There was a conflict of interest of having an advertising guy doing one of their books. But eventually they needed someone to write the Hulk, and he said, come on, give me a shot. And they did, and that worked out really damn well for both Marvel and for Peter David. He took the Hulk from being a title that was, I think it was bi-monthly at the time, on the verge of being canceled, to one of their hottest books. One of their most popular books, critically and sales-wise. It was very well received. He was the guy who worked with McFarlane when he first came into Marvel. doing the Hulk. But the story that really and the thing that really jumps out at me when I'm reading about what he was doing there, he decided to really explore the fractured psyche that Bruce Banner had, and how that impacted his why he was the Hulk and why he was so angry all the time, and really the whole psychology of it, not just to go out and smash things, but why is he smashing things? Why is he doing this? And he took it to a whole nother level beyond just superhero stuff. It was fun to read. There was comedy in there. There was the smash stuff. But the height of his story came when he did a future story called Future Imperfect with George Perez.
That should have been on my Marvel list. I just don't have a trade of it.
And that was one of the rules there on that, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. You have to actually have it hurt. But it was an incredible story that dove into how finally the Banner and Hulk merged into this one psyche, who was, you know, I'm physically a badass, and mentally I'm also a badass, because Bruce Banner, one of the smartest guys in the Marvel universe, and the Hulk, without question, one of the most powerful. I mean, just pretty much basically impossible to kill. And the Maestro, which is what he called himself in this story, this Future Imperfect story, which was said I don't know how many years in the future, but he decided to take over the world. And he did. He did it through brute strength and through intelligence. And Peter David said, you know, was the guy who basically said, why not? Why can't this guy do that? And he did. And who better to draw it but George Perez? Because it involved showing all the heroes, all the villains from the Marvel Universe, and that's what George Perez does. And he did that story, went back, was doing the monthly Hulk as well, introduced Joe Fixit, which was a secret identity for the Hulk when he went off to be a bouncer. A dog wandering in our neighborhood. Shiny object. Joe Fixit. Yeah, he was an enforcer in Vegas. And again, Peter David exploring the fractured psyche of Bruce Banner a little bit more. And eventually, he had to leave the Hulk. He was told that he could do a certain story, and when he went to go write it, they said, "No, we're not going to actually let you do that story." So he quit. And DC snatched him up, said, who do you want to do? He said, who's not selling? They said, Aquaman. And so he started doing Aquaman. And he is the guy who wrote the story where Aquaman lost his hand, got a hook for a hand for a while, made the book fun. I think that this is that his approach to Aquaman, making it sort of taking advantage of the fact that he is viewed as a joke in a way. Mm-hmm. Talks to fish, swims underwater. Not the most glamorous of powers, but also he then reminded people that he is the king of Atlantis. He is married to Mira. Actually, at this time, Mira was dead, so he had him hook up with Dolphin, who is an incredibly awesome character, by the way. Swims around in a T-shirt and short shorts.
Oh, great character.
If nothing else, visually, a great... Yeah. What's that, Mer?
That's all you need to know. Short shorts, T-shirt, there you go.
Underwater.
Yeah.
How the T-shirt stayed on, we never got that story, but that's okay.
It's magic.
It's magic. Uh-oh, it's magic. Again, he pulled something out of his hat, made Aquaman a popular character. I think the approach that he was taking, what I was saying was the approach he was taking is what Geoff Johns is trying to do with the current Aquaman book, which is, hey, he is kind of a joke, but that should be part of the story as well. And I, to some degree, I think Geoff Johns is succeeding. But not to get off track there. But I think he owes a lot to that point of view and using it as a story point to Peter David. Mm-hmm. David stayed on the book for 26 issues, including the zero issue. God help us, there were zero issues back then. Did that for a while, worked with some really, talented artists.
And he did a ton of like world building on that series too. Like he made Atlantis and the whole underworld community kind of come alive. Like it was more than just Aquaman. It was Aquaman as king and Aquaman with his history and there was just a huge ton of supporting characters and stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Volko, whatever his name is, it turned out to be somewhat conniving chancellor.
I'd forgotten about him. And that kind of ties into his, like, he did a little miniseries before they relaunched Aquaman, didn't he? He did Time and Tide.
Right. Sort of the year one. And that's actually the only funny you should say that. That's the only collection of the Peter David Aquaman that I could find through Amazon was the Time and Tide miniseries. It was great. Awesome art on it, really clean, and like you said, it was the year one essentially. For Aquaman. When I reference year one, for those who may not know, it's like when Batman year one or Spider-Man year one, all those Frank Miller kind of kicked off with that.
Yeah, other companies have used that title.
Oh, yeah.
They did a Green Hornet year one at Dynamite.
Oh, did they? With Kevin Smith? Okay.
No, not with Kevin Smith. Actually, it was Matt Wagner. It was a lot better than the actual Kevin Smith / Green Hornet thing, which the Kevin Smith materials run out recently. I think Phil Hester's writing it now. But anyway, I digress. Continue.
No, it's okay. I think that's kind of the point here is how the kind of influence that these creators that we're going to talk about have had or have taken advantage of. And even preempting that, Murr, is he did the Atlantis Chronicles.
Yes,
as well.
He did. And that's the neat thing about that is that they never credited him as the writer in the book, I don't think.
Is that right?
I think so. I think as I was getting the issues, they played with the conceit that it was really written by some archaeologist or something. And it took me years to figure out that it was actually Peter David, because I'm almost positive in the actual issues it never lists him as a writer, they play with the idea that a real archaeologist has found this Atlantean world or whatever and is writing it as a series
kind
of books. It was I'm gonna have to dig him out because it was a great series, like total world building and really set the stage for what David was gonna do with Aquaman whenever he got back to the character. But I'm almost positive they don't list him as a writer.
Well, right? And that's kind of neat. I think that the idea that they say, hey, we have got this guy who's going to write about the history of Atlantis because he researched it. He actually started digging into the dirt. But that's kind of – I haven't read it. So I was going to try and avoid talking too much about it. But now I need to – they don't have a collection of it either. That's in a big –
trying
problem.
To see. Yeah, I found that on Comic Book DB. They've got him listed as a writer on Comic Book DB, but you can't really tell from the covers whether he's listed as a writer or not. But
well,
that's
now
interesting.
They do.
Yeah.
Now they've got it, but I think Murray's saying it that at the time it was just it's kind of cool.
That's cool. Yeah. That's a neat touch.
Right, trying to see who the creators are.
Oh, no, they do. They list right on the cover, Peter David. Okay, so he is listed, but in the book... Now, maybe I was just a dumb kid, but and didn't clue into the fact, but...
Well, they probably made it look so much like that you might have assumed that.
Yeah, Maybe.
It read like a history book as opposed to a comic book, and that's one of the things. Peter David is very not a Renaissance guy, but he's very versatile. He can write about all sorts of different genres, and it fits. You know, he can adjust his style to whatever it is he's being asked to write about. You know, he goes from writing about a really screwed up guy who goes around destroying stuff to a guy who's a king, a disrespected king, but definitely a king. And
I follow his blog too. When he writes stuff, it's pretty funny.
I used to read his column that he did in Comic Buyer's Guide back in the day.
Yep, but I digress. Isn't it? And he reprints. That was the name of it. That's why I kind of said that. It was kind of a joke, but he reprints those articles on his blog.
Does he? Okay.
Yeah, on the 28th, he's got one that was originally published March 15, 1996, in Comic Buyer's Guide number 1165. And then it's just, you know, he just reprints those, and he comments on politics frequently, and that's one of the reasons why I follow him, because, you know, he leans the same direction I do, so.
He's a well-rounded guy. I mean, occasionally he gets a little preachy, and occasionally he gets a little self-involved in his books, but that's okay. I mean, he makes no apology for that, which is cool. Nope. Some guys might. They might go, "Oh, you know, I'm sorry, I did that, or I'm sorry, I said that." And he doesn't do that. He's very he's comfortable in his own skin when it comes to this stuff.
Right. Exactly.
And like I said, he switches up and to move my topic forward. He switches up genres, and his next major thing after Aquaman. I mean, he did some other stuff, but the one that jumped out at me was Madrox, which he did back over at Marvel, which was to take a character that he had dragged out of obscurity when he was writing X-Factor originally, which was Madrox the Multiple Man, and made him into an interesting character. Made him into a character that took advantage of the fact that he had all these different lives that he had lived, and how he never really forgot. When he would, you know, create these duplicates, he would send them out in the world to learn stuff. Then he reabsorbs the duplicates back into him and retains, for the most part, their knowledge and their experience. And basically making him a very old character without actually aging him, I think, is the best way of, you know, he has lifetimes of experience in a single lifetime. Made him into a detective, brought in the noir stuff, which is what I was, you know, where I was going with the changing up styles. The whole Madrox miniseries was a crime, you know, a crime drama, like a Humphrey Bogart story or something. A little bit of humor, but also dark. Hmm. And he extended that into the new X-Factor book, where a collection of C-level X-Men characters gather to run a detective agency out of New York City. And it is – right now it's one of the X titles or Marvel titles that I read monthly, month in and month out. And it's fun. It's good. It reads well. It's not always funny, but it's always a great read.
You back?
I'm back.
Okay.
Did you drop, Murray? Did I?
I dropped.
Yeah. Yes. I got a thing saying that there was problems with the call. Let me call you back. That's okay, because Caleb talked right through it.
I wasn't even paying attention. I'm sitting here staring at my window.
No, that's fine. We got all your stuff just fine.
That's good.
So continue.
God, thank God, because I don't think I could have repeated what I just said by any stretch.
I didn't say a word. I didn't say a word because I could still hear you, so I figured it's still recording you. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like a Charlie Brown adult. Any case, where was I? Oh, X-Factor. X-Factor from Marvel. One of the few titles I still buy or read every month from Marvel, and it's because of Peter David. Mm-hmm. Did we lose somebody again? Ah, there goes Chris. Yep, he's walking away.
He's walking
Whatever.
Away. I'll be right back.
See, now I'm paying attention. I don't know. Do you read? Do you? I know that you don't read a ton of Marvel there, Mer. But is X-Factor even on your radar?
No, I've heard stuff about it, and I should probably pick it up at some point. But I never have. I'm trying to think what I did. His Hulk run. I read a lot of his Hulk run, and I think I kind of peeked in on some of his Captain Marvel stuff. But I have not read his any of his X-Factor stuff.
I highly recommend it. It's fun. It's good detective stuff and superhero stuff. I mean, he doesn't shy away from it. And he takes some of the plots that run through the X-Men books and ones that have been dropped and finishes them. Like the story when Rain from the New Mutants got pregnant. They didn't know what to do with that particular storyline in the regular X books, so he said, "Okay, I'll do something with it." And he had her have her baby and all that fun and nonsense in the X Factor book. In any case, I'm just saying, a fun book. And let's see. So what else? So it's got Shatterstar in there and Richter,
yeah.
Who are openly gay. Characters.
That's right.
And for that, Peter David won a couple of GLAAD awards for that. What else? I don't know what else to say about him other than, you know, he's also done some Star Trek novels.
Done a lot of Star Trek novels. I've read several of them, and he's very, very good at Star Trek stuff.
Yeah, and it's mostly Next Generation stuff, though, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think he's ever done any original series or Deep Space Nine.
No, I don't think so, no. I don't know if you're aware. Just for a second, interrupt you there.
No, go ahead.
I don't know if you knew about him and a couple other writers getting together and starting a thing called Crazy Ape Press. I gave you guys a link to something he wrote, but him, Michael Jan Friedman, Robert Greenberger, Glenn Howman, Aaron Rosenberg, and Howard Weinstein all get together, and they have a blog called, you know, a site, Crazy 8, number 8, press.com, and they're doing just different things. Peter David has something called the Camelot Papers, and it's like, I'm not exactly sure what it's about. I think it's about during, medieval times, and the cover looks like a copy of People, but it's, you know, tales about things going on in medieval times. It looks kind of interesting. And then, you know, several of them have written things, and they're publishing under that publishing company. So
I think that's interesting. And again, I'm going to digress completely. One of the things that really is lacking in the comic book industry is sort of a collective, a mm-hmm. union mentality. I'm not always a big fan of unions.
Mm-hmm.
I understand the necessity for them, and I understand that, you know, I think all of us workers are better for the concept and better for it in the end. Yeah. Occasionally they go overboard, and occasionally they push their luck, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, everything always, you know, you get people that get a hold of the power, and then – you know, they misuse it. That's what happens with unions usually. But anyway, go ahead.
Oh, and I was just going to say, and then that's one of the things, like with the Man of Action group, you know, Joe mm-hmm. Casey and Joe Kelly and Steve Siegel and Duncan Rouleau, they created the Man of Action group where they, you know, they've got a collective of these four creators who
mm-hmm.
they negotiate together. And it sounds to me like Peter David and this group of creators are doing a similar thing where they have their collective power where they can say, look, you know,
yep.
you want one of us, you're gonna need to take all eight of us, or
yeah,
you know.
Their fact says, let's see, what are you? And it says Crazy Eight Press is a consortium of writers, and it gives the list of them, decided to bypass the traditional publishing process to bring our work directly to you, the reader. So basically, they do. It's like their little mini publishing company, and they do stuff like Kindle editions or whatever, and directly to Amazon and so forth. So, and see, it talks great. All about that. Yeah, it's kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's it's it. And it will work to everyone's advantage because if they, you know, that means they don't have to share revenue if they end up licensing something out.
Exactly.
They get to keep it all themselves. And I would imagine they, you know, and it still allows them to go out and do work for other companies, but occasionally they'll bring it through here and they can all take advantage of the of what it reaps.
Mm-hmm.
Great. I didn't know about this. I'm going to read this page a little bit later.
Yeah.
Cool. So in any case, you know, he's done Star Trek stuff. He's done Young Justice. He did Supergirl for a while. So on and so forth. I mean, the guy, he's been around. He's going to be around. So that's my creator of the week, Peter Allen David.
There you go.
22 minutes in.
Not too bad.
Thanks.
Yeah. Excellent. So, no, you covered him quite well.
Thank you. I try. Okay, I'm done. I'll talk to you guys later. No, good. Next. Whoever's next.
It doesn't matter. I'm going to be long-winded more than likely, but I could go next.
Go for it.
All right. My creator will be Mark Waite, which I've mentioned several times on this podcast. He's probably probably my favorite writer. That changes sometimes. It was Jeff Johns for a long time, but right now I think it would be him. Let's like get a little bio off of Comic Book DB here, cheat a little bit, because you know I want to make sure I don't screw it up and don't do him justice. But anyway, the bio on comicbookdb.com, it says Mark Waite bought his first comic, Batman number 180, at age 4 and has never once since entertained the notion of not buying comics. He lived all over the Deep South through his formative teenage years, though you couldn't tell by his accent, thank God. I have a feeling he wrote this, but anyway. In his early 20s, granted only the writing skills one absorbs by living life as a copious reader, Waite began freelance reporting for the comic book trade publications Amazing Heroes and Comic Buyer's Guide. This led to a brief staff position in the mid-1980s as editor of Amazing Heroes, followed by a longer editorial tenure at DC Comics, 1987 to 1989. Sorry. One year, he edited the Legion of Superheroes, Secret Origins, Doom Patrol, and a host of one-shot titles. With writer Brian Augustin, Waite co-created DC's extremely successful franchise of Elseworld, quote-unquote, stories, with Gotham by Gaslight, a tale of what Batman's career might have been like had he been active during the days of Jack the Ripper. And we'll talk more about that. Elseworld stories is one of my favorite stories that he did. Next it says, Waite left staff in 1989 to pursue a full-time freelance career. Since then, he has written stories for every major comics publisher, including Marvel Comics, where he wrote X-Men and Captain America.
Ooh, Cap.
Oh, little echo there. Anyway, continue.
He's so good. He's worth talking about twice.
Yeah. He wrote Archie Comics. I didn't know that. Where he served briefly as their cover gag editor. He's written for Dark Horse Comics and DC Comics, under whose banner Waite produces most of his work. Oh, this is kind of older then, because he hasn't written for DC in a while. But anyway, in the years past, he's written every major comics character from Superman to Batman to Spider-Man. Waite's current credits include – oh, yeah, this is old. Anyway, blah, 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 blah. He lives outside of Philadelphia. Actually, I think he lives in L.A. now. But anyway, this
– phone number.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a little old info, some of it. But he went on to – he's been the editor-in-chief of Boom. That's where he's gotten pretty prominent again. It's where he – we talked about last week. One of my favorite indie books that he does is Irredeemable. I need to get caught up on his Incorruptible. I first got notice of his work when he put out Kingdom Come, which was one of my DC picks, and that's probably when he really became the most prominent, because it is a classic work. It's one of those books that's always in print. I don't have the Absolute Edition yet, but I will own it one day, believe me.
Trust it will be yours. Oh,
it will.
Yes.
Yes, it will. The precious will be mine. but I have it in hardcover. I've got it in trade. Another one good he did when he was trying to do creator-owned work, and when he came back to DC for a while, they let him finish it. Something which is a mature reader's title. It's called Empire by him and Barry Kitson. This was before they did work on the Legion. Two incarnations ago, or is that three incarnations? If you listen to the Legion podcast, Legion substitute podcasters, they can sort all that out for you. But him and Barry Kitson contributed on this creator-owned work, and they had a company called Ape Entertainment. They had financial backers backed out. It was him and Kurt Busiek, and I can't remember the rest of them off the top of my head.
Wasn't Perez part of that?
Yeah, he was. He did that Crimson Plague.
Thank you.
Yeah, and they but that fell through. But he was able to finish the series, took the stuff that he'd done, and whatever. And I have a trade here in my hand, which I'm not sure why I didn't put that on my list of stuff. But basically, the whole premise of Empire was what if the world dominating superhero won and defeated all the superheroes and slowly took over the world and so on and so forth. And it really showed a dark side of wage work. And it shocked me that he was able to go that dark, but I think he has commented since then it might even be in this actual issue that he was in a certain place in his life and it reflected in his writing. After Kingdom Come, we'll switch to that, but that's really good. He had a 7-year run on The Flash, which we mentioned before, and that's when I really become really a fan of his work. But then he's done other things. He did very good with before mentioned the Barry Kitson and Brian Augustin. He did a JLA Year One, which we brought up the Year One stuff previously, and they did that when they had to do that to kind of fix things that happened after the crisis and rewrite that Wonder Woman was not one of the founding members of the JLA. They rewrote it where it was Black Canary. That was, of course, at that time, Earth 2 didn't exist anymore. So they kind of fixed some things up. And even though it's really not in continuity anymore, it's an excellent book to read about them. And he also did with Augustin and Kitson, he did a Green Lantern Flash series that had
Hello.
I'm here.
All right. Oh, sorry. I got the mute button got hit. Anyway, as I was saying, he also did a wonderful series, which I can't remember the title of. It's off the top of my head, with Green Lantern. It was back when Green Lantern was still dead. Hal Jordan and Barry Allen were still dead. And they basically interacted with the Golden Age versions, Alan Scott and Jay Garrick. Very good series. God, I wish I could remember the name of it.
It was Brave and the Bold, actually.
That's right, Brave and the Bold. Very, very good series. If you look at some of his work, what he's done, very, very – oh, wait. Actually, it's already there. Very long list of things he's written on. He wrote for CrossGen. He was one of the first converts to the CrossGen company that is now defunct. He somewhat has a reputation of not playing nice with others because he frequently, if he gets a long-standing gig, he ends up going back to freelance. But he's – I know he's done a – well-acclaimed run on Spider-Man not too long ago called The Gauntlet, which I haven't read yet. He's even, I didn't know this, he's even credited as a penciler of the con in Who's Who in the Legion of Superheroes number 5, which just completely shocked me. He did some cover art, apparently.
My little back issue, Ben.
Yeah, according to, according to that, he's listed as a cover, done some cover art anyway.
Huh.
Let's see. But some other stuff that he's done, it's not superhero related. I haven't quite read yet, but I've heard really good about. He did it under Boom. There's that was it the Unknown that he did with about a detective? What's not the name of that? Sorry, I'm still waking up here.
That's okay. I like his Boom Kids stuff that he did. He did some Incredibles, which I gave to my daughter.
I haven't read that, but I've heard it was really good. And let's see, what else did he do? He did I think one of the first ones I'd heard of him doing that wasn't had to do anything with superheroes is called Potter's Field. And I need to read that, but basically it was about this guy that goes in and he takes a John or Jane Doe's that show up in the morgue, or people that are in Potter's Field, where they put people, that's the name, they put people that they don't know who they are that they find dead, and he goes through and figures out how they died, and if it there's like a crime was committed, you know, it figures them out, and he basically finds out who they are so they don't have an unmarked grave.
It's like a cold case kind of book, it sounds like.
Yeah, and I think it was just one series. I don't think he's done anything else with it. I really want to read that because it sounds really good. And one of the things that I love about Mark Waid is that no matter what anything that I've read, even if the story, which I don't think I've read a story of his I haven't liked yet, but for some reason if the story wasn't all that great, the characters, and that's probably his greatest talent, is that he can make the characters so three-dimensional that they seem almost real, you know, or they could be real. Looking at through Kingdom Come with, well, of course, the painted art of Alex Ross, and those characters, they come to life when he writes it. The Empire series he did with his character Golgoth, the evil villain, supervillain that has taken over the world. It's real. He does really good quality work. You get sucked in. I usually can't stop reading it.
Kingdom Come, while it was beautiful, it wouldn't have been what it was if it wasn't for the plot and the script.
Yeah, absolutely. And in, though he did a somewhat of a sequel called The Kingdom, it wasn't quite as good. and even though he wrote everything and had all kinds of different artists, but still, the characters were still three-dimensional to me. They really had life to them. But anyway, definitely anything I highly recommend just about anything he's written. Like I said, so far I haven't read anything that I didn't like that he's done. So, and he's done just about everything. I'm looking here. He's done some Spike stories from the character Spike from Buffy. Star Trek comics. He got Starman listed, Thunderbolts. I remember he did that for Marvel. Wolverine, several Wolverine things. X-Factor, he's listed under that, and his editor credits are, you know, the titles he's edited. I think that was actually some edited titles, but crossover classics. It's like Creepy 1993 Yearbook, he's on here. Classics Illustrated, he did some of the Civil War stuff at Marvel, but you name it, he's pretty much he's written it. So
the
wait a minute, I'm looking at Peter David stuff now.
Sorry. I was about to say.
Never mind.
Okay. Thunderbolts number 1. Until this Batman number 1 came out last month, That was, in my opinion, the single best first issue of a superhero comic book that I'd ever read.
Yeah.
Because it got the whole concept in there.
Mm-hmm.
It made it incredibly accessible. I mean, until this Batman number one came out, I would have held that up as the here is a first issue that you can give to anyone who's never read any of these characters before, and they will get it. And that Mark Waid and Mark Bagley knocked it out of the park on that one.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't that Kurt Busiek?
Oh, you're right. Never mind. Well, you said Thunderbolt, so I was like, I was giving him credit.
No, I was looking at Peter David's list, actually.
I'll go back.
But anyway, let's see. Some of the stuff he's written. Captain America,
Mark Waid, Thunderbolts would have been awesome.
Yeah, it would have been. Yeah, that was Kurt Busiek. Yeah, my apologies.
But he did do Tower of Babel.
Yes.
For Justice League, which is going to be adapted, I think, as a cartoon.
JLA Doomed, the next animated thing that they're coming out with, because Batman Year One just came out, that's what it's based on. And I didn't know that until I read that the other day. But, that was probably the best Justice League story I've ever written, even till to this day. His run on the Justice League after Grant Morrison left was just some really, really good stuff. I loved it. Loved it. But anyway, he's written it. Go ahead.
You start listing off those credits. I'm like, wow, that sounds a lot like Peter David.
Yeah, it was. Go back to that. You got The Flash, Amalgamated with Comics. He's written some Booster Gold, Captain America, some Cthulhu Tales when he was doing stuff for Boom. Some Detective Comics is in there. Irredeemable and Incorruptible, of course. He done JLA, and looks like even some JLA adapted into German is listed here.
Ruse from CrossGen was the only CrossGen book I continued to buy until it ended. I bought a bunch to start with, but that was the only one that I continued with.
Well, yeah, because Disney bought the rights to that, and then Disney bought Marvel. He actually reprised that title for a 4-issue limited series recently for Marvel. It was actually pretty good.
Was it? I didn't. I should have, but I didn't.
It was actually good. That's one of the ones I liked. He did a title called Crux for CrossGen. It was actually pretty good. I have all those issues. He eventually left.
His CrossGen stories are awesome.
Yeah.
I don't mean the actual comic book. I mean his stories about CrossGen.
Oh, about what happened there? Yeah, yes. I've read some of that stuff.
When he finally was able to talk without worrying about that he was going to get his ass sued, there were some incredibly scary things to hear about.
It's like he did some zombie tales as well.
God, he's been around, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. He has.
Wow.
It says, 80 in the 80s. I was in like a senior in high school when he started his freelance career, so. He's been writing a long time. And I actually met him back in 96. He was still writing The Flash then. Hadn't done his work. He was editing The Legion, I think, at the time, or partly. I got to talk, Brainiac 5 is one of his favorite characters, which makes sense when you read his Legion run with Barry Kitson, some of the stuff that he had him do, but I've got a couple of signed Flash comics. It was that during his run when the Flash was lost. Wally West was lost in time, and that Fox, I forget the guy's name. His last name Fox from the Flash from the future came was in our time for a while. And it was like,
He was Flash 4 or Flash 5 or whatever.
I got a couple issues of that. Signed by him. I hadn't bought Kingdom.
John Fox. Sorry,
that's it. John Fox. I have that. And but then it said in his bio he helped create the Elseworlds imprint. And one of the best Elseworlds was, I think, even today is Kingdom Come. So, but great stuff. Really great stuff.
Excellent. I think my favorite Waid is his run on Flash and his run on Fantastic Four.
Yeah, see, I'm not as familiar with his Marvel stuff as I am the other. But I do love – I picked up Daredevil specifically because he's writing it, and I love it. I really do. He's writing for Marvel right now. I think the fourth or fifth issue just came out. I haven't read it yet, but I've heard it's the best so far.
It is so good. You're going to absolutely love number five. Yeah. I just actually read it this morning.
Mm-hmm.
It is it's a fun freaking title. And with your creator that you're bringing up in a little bit here, Murr, the style is...
Caleb, I think you're getting scratchy.
Am I now?
Nope, you're
now. Perfect.
Perfect.
I keep forgetting to go get I was actually at Staples yesterday, and I forgot. I said to myself, I'm going to pick up a headphone, and I got shiny object and totally forgot.
There was a dog at Staples?
There was a dog at Staples. It was kind of funny, actually. Yeah. It was a little – it started talking to me and say, kill the people. No.
and – I'm going to go just on a slight tangent, but still talk about Mark Wade. I kind of mentioned it earlier. I just got to finish taking a comics experience writing class Andy Schmidt puts on, and they have a creator's workshop. I'm going to continue with it. And Mark Wade's going to be on there talking, and hopefully I'm going to get some questions in and put my the goal of the class is to have a 5-page comic book script. I know Caleb has read it already. I'd like to get a copy to Murray, but a lot of us from the class are talking about doing an anthology with our work in it. So that's a little shameless plug to start off with. I haven't even found an artist for my story yet. We haven't even got a printer or any of that stuff, but we're in early talks of actually doing that. So hopefully that will be out soon. My first, actual comic book story. So,
cool. I can imagine myself talking with Mark Wade. I'd be like Chris Farley, like, you remember that time when you wrote that comic book?
See, that's what
that
I'm
was
afraid.
So cool.
That's what I'm afraid is going to happen. But they have this comic creators workshop. They have it's like a monthly fee. You can buy like 6 months at a stretch. But they just had the guy that you know, that Felkoff guy, which I missed that one. The last one I saw, they had two comic shop owners from two big shops in Chicago talk about the new 52 and, you know, the things that they – how they decide what to order for their shops and how to get your books in the – you know, self-done books into their shops. And it's a really great workshop if anybody's ever thinking about getting into that stuff. The next intro to writing class I think is going to be in January if you're interested. But anyway, yeah, it was a really great class. It wasn't cheap, but 6 weeks worth of instruction, and I learned a lot. So I have a lot more respect for the writing process than I ever have, and it's a really good experience. So all right, that's my ramble. So,
alrighty.
Hopefully you get an opportunity to pick Mark Wade's brain a little bit.
I got to look at the thread again and see you exactly, because they usually post a bunch of questions ahead of time and then he goes through them, and but it's all like you can they can see you if you turn your camera on and everybody can see each other and you can chat in question box, and it'll be really good. And that's my free trial of it will be over by then, but it's, you know, I'm going to put the $30 a month out just so I can at least see that anyway.
You should edit this part of the podcast out and send it to him and say, see, you're one of my favorite writers. Talk to me.
Who knows? I might even ask him to come on the podcast. That would be kind of cool. I know he's been on the Legion podcast. I don't know if we're polished enough for a guest yet. I don't know how Paul does it. And I know, Paul, eventually you're going to hear this, but I don't think I can be as professional as Paul is, especially somebody as cool as Mark Wade. And if you want to hear more about Mark Wade and his process, they actually had him on the show. And I've listened to that about 3 or 4 times, just trying to glean information about how he does his writing. If I could write just half as good as him, then I would be a happy man. So
he does a good interview for sure, Mr. Mark Wade.
Yes, he does. He does. So anyway, that's enough about Mark Wade. It's your turn.
Alrighty. Well, I went with – I tried to think – I mean, there are so many creators I like, but I went with I think the first one that I could recognize as being someone. So way back when I was little reading books, it was really just the story or the character that I would be interested in. And then eventually I started to figure out, hey, this character kind of looks the same as this character. And once I started making those connections, I think the very first comic artist that I probably could recognize was Don Heck. So I'm going to go with Don Heck for a little bit because he's, I think, one of the first ones. I mean, him, maybe Jim Aparo. But I don't think I collected much with Jim Aparo stuff in it. But Don Heck, apparently, I did collect some of his stuff. So I'm going with him. He was mostly a Marvel Silver Age artist. He worked at Marvel before it was Marvel, and he worked on some of their spooky monster books and their romance books and stuff. And then as Marvel got started, he was pulled over there, and he worked on the Avengers a little bit, and I had no idea, but he was also one of the creators of Iron Man. I had always kind of assumed Marvel was Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, and Ditko, and that was it. But I guess he was involved in a lot of the early Iron Man stuff. Like, he was the original artist, although I guess Kirby did the covers, but and designed the Iron Man look, but Don Heck, I guess, was the original artist. So that's my little bit of neat news. But for me, I started with Don Heck in the Teen Titans way back when they were – it must have been the first time that they were brought back. So they had their run in the 70s or in the Silver Age, and then they were canceled, and then they were brought back at the end of the 70s there. And – that's when I started reading Teen Titans, and he happened to be one of the artists on one of their last storylines before it was canceled again. It was one of those great. I mean, I loved the team books, and I always loved the team books where there was a team teaming up with another team, so you got all kinds of colorful faces bumping around the book. And this one, in this particular run, it was the Teen Titans meeting up with the Teen Titans West. So you had the West Coast version of the team and traditional Silver Age version of the team, and they were all getting together to first battle each other and then battle the big Mr. It was something great like Mr. Disaster or
not Mr. Twister, was it?
No, that would have been way earlier. I think it was. I don't know. Anyway, it didn't matter. It was just some world disaster causing guy, and both teams were doing battle. And so for me, at that point, I still had no idea who Don Heck was, but I was certainly into the Teen Titans. So those three or four issues that he did there imprinted on my little head and made me a big Teen Titans follower. And at the same time, I was following DC Comics Presents and picking up those issues as I saw them at that point I didn't know anything about comic shops, so I was always buying them at the corner store. So I'd head down to Shortstop and I'd pick up whatever was on the spinner rack, and DC Comics Presents was always out there, and I picked up a couple of those issues, some of the ones with Superman and Flash, because at that point Flash was one of the characters that I really enjoyed reading, and if Flash was on the cover, I tended to pick up the issue. So that issue featured another race between Superman and Flash, and again, eventually I came to learn that that was illustrated by Don Heck as well. And then he did a run on the Flash, and it wasn't very long. It was maybe a year long, but at the time, that's when I first clued into, oh, these things come out every month, and sometimes the stories continue, and if you go to the shop or the store, you know, like a month later, you'll get the next issue. And it was kind of neat me figuring out how this whole thing worked. So I would hang out by the candy store getting ready to rifle through the racks once a month. And this store, they kept – I mean, it was a you know, just a corner store, so it wasn't like a bookstore or anything. But the comic rack kept moving, like, from corner to corner of the store, so I'd have to, like – hunt through the store and figure out where where my little spinner rack was and you know, pick up a couple nibblies on the way. But eventually I would find the spinner rack and pick up Flash. And to me, this was – I mean, this era of Flash was – it was fun. Like, this was where they introduced, like, some of the best of the Rogues Gallery. Like, Rainbow Raider was introduced during his run. Like, that's the one thing that bugged me about Geoff Johns's run. He had a very limited viewpoint about who was part of the Rogues. So he had his five or six main Rogue characters, and I was every time I read it, I'd be like, okay, but when is the Rainbow Raider coming in? Where are all these real Rogues? I mean, okay, Captain Cold, yeah, but give me the Rainbow Raider, give me the Golden Glider. Where are these characters?
That's funny.
Yeah, who? Dr. Alchemy and Mr. Element kind of appeared in that run, and it was it. Yeah, it was fun. I mean, I enjoyed it, and by that point, I remember Flash was involved with a beautiful redhead named Fiona. I guess Iris had been killed off by that point, but that was before my time. I didn't really know much about it, but I knew Fiona had long red hair and she was pretty hot. So she also imprinted on me. And then from Flash, he moved to the Justice League. And at the time, a team book, I loved picking up the Justice League. And I remember picking up Justice League just before issue 200, I think. They were doing a couple of – well, not really a crossover, but the Justice League was involved in some sort of time shenanigans.
Is this the Western Heroes one?
Yeah, the Western Heroes one, and they went back to the Old West. That was Don Heck? That was Don Heck. They did Cinnamon, another sexy little redhead there.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No. Yeah. Yeah, so all these Old West characters popped into the Justice League. And again, that was one of the stories that stuck with me. Some of those Flash stories stuck with me. JLA kind of moved right into then the issue 200, which has some beautiful George Perez artwork in it. But it's also got like a section by, I'm sure, by Don Heck in there. If not, I mean, Don Heck comes on again right after issue 200, and he's there for, I want to say, close to a year, issue 201 to, well, 10 or 11 anyway.
Man, I had no idea. I mean, those were my formative Justice League years. I had no idea.
Yeah, he did that. He did that five-part JLA, JSA All-Star Crisis on Earth Prime crossover. So that's that was for me, that was my first big JLA, JSA crossover. And you got the All-Star Squadron thrown in there too, and you got five parts, and you got to follow it from book to book to book to book. And that was Don Heck. The covers were amazing, like the amazing George Perez covers, and I think Joe Kubert was doing the All-Star Squadron covers, but Don Heck was doing the interiors for the Justice League issues. And again, that was a series that stuck with me. I mean, I can still picture some of the little nuclear bomb irradiated people kind of clawing over Zatanna and them bouncing through the time stream trying to figure out what was going on. There was a short little adventure where the JLA goes up against that crime cartel with the cards.
Royal Flush Gang.
Yes.
The Royal Flush Gang. Yeah. And that was another series that kind of stuck with me. So at the time, I could tell that this was an artist that I would recognize. I didn't always love it. Like, I wouldn't say he was the most dynamic artist in the world, but his style was distinctive and it stuck with me enough for me to kind of clue in that there was something there that I liked. And then as I got introduced to comic shops and back issue bins and stuff, I started picking up old copies of Marvel's Collector Items Classics, because I liked the Fantastic Four and I wanted to get some of their early issues, but there was no way I was going to pay like $1 million for issue 2, 3, and 4. So you could pick up, you know, like these collector's items, classics, they called them, and you could get, like, the early issues of the Fantastic Four, but also in those books were, who else was it? There was Iron Man, and there was, I want to say, maybe Doctor Strange, or, it was a big, thick book, and they just kind of collected a whole bunch of these early stories, so I got to see, like, an early chunk of the Don Heck and Stan Lee Iron Man, which was fun. You got to see, like, I mean, this is where Hawkeye was introduced, and Black Widow comes in her sexy little Catwoman suit, and it's neat. It's a fun. It's like classic Marvel. You've got the hero with the broken heart, and you've got the you know, supporting cast that has no clue, and you've got the little romances going on in the background, and all the time you're meeting the big villains and at the time Iron Man was kind of like, these stories kind of had a sense of, I don't know, America versus Russia, kind of the Russian sort of spy. It was more spy centered than it was superhero stuff. It was kind of, they were neat stories. By that point, I had been collecting back issues, so I got to see a little bit more of Don Heck, and I realized that he was also one of the earlier artists on Avengers after Jack Kirby left. So he came onto Avengers around issue 9 or 10, and that's when, at the time, I was picking up some of the Marvel Masterworks, getting some of their early appearances and stuff. And again, I saw his name and started to clue in that this guy had been around from, you know, throughout the 50s, 60s, 70s, and into the 80s too. I don't know if he did much beyond that. I think he passed away mid 90s, but I don't know if he was doing much comic work after the 80s. But he's the one that stuck with me. And
he closed out Wonder Woman at the Crisis time. I'm like looking at some of these issues.
You could be right. Yeah, he was on. Yeah. Now, I don't think I ever read any of his Wonder Woman stuff, but you're right. Yeah, he would have been.
No, I know I'm right. I'm looking at.
Yeah.
I'm cheating. I'm looking online.
Well, then you're definitely right.
I couldn't be more right. I'm looking at this guy. I mean, he didn't do any of the cover work, but he did the interiors, and I remember these issues. This is when they had devolved her back, and were going to when Perez was going to reboot her. And
right,
he did
right.
These issues leading up to that. Wow. That Justice League stuff still blows me away, man. That's again, those were my formative years on Justice League, and I didn't even think that those were him.
Yeah. Like he was there for, well, I mean, you know, just a year, but a year and a bit maybe. But yeah, those are the issues of the JLA that stuck with me.
Yeah, that Western story was so cool with the elongated man, Green Lantern, Satana, and Flash going back in time, not losing their memories. That whole comic book trope.
Yes.
But yeah, the art was great. I mean, that's where I learned to look for Cinnamon and Batlash.
Yes.
I had seen Jonah Hex at that point, obviously. I think he had his own book during that period. And Scalp Hunter, I think, was in it as
right.
well. But I had seen him elsewhere before. But those were the issues where I was like, ooh, this Batlash character is really cool.
Yeah.
And the look, that whole rogue look that he had, the tilted hat with the little flower in it and stuff. Wow. You've opened my eyes, Murr.
There you go. Great.
And of course, his Avengers stuff. I mean, there's no question that stuff definitely is distinctive.
Oh, for sure. I mean, he did that. He did that run on. Well, what he would have introduced the new guys, right? Like the once they got rid of all the big guns and they pulled in. Oh no, I guess that was still Kirby. Kirby introduced like Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver and stuff, but he would have been the one that Don Heck would have been the one that had really contribute, like really pushed the stories forward then. And some of that Avenger world building stuff.
Well, he was on there. Looks like as early as number 17, if not before. So
Oh, definitely before. Yeah, like he's, well, there's my 10. I think 9 or 10 is the first issue that I've got him in the, I was going to call them archives, in the Masterworks edition there.
But that would still be with the first appearances of, like, Hawkeye as an Avenger.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he's, I mean, he's one of those guys that's been around he's a part of the history of comics for sure.
Yeah. God, I hope he's not I can only assume he's one of those guys that got screwed, even though he was part of definitely a lot of the formative years for most of us who still read or even create comics. Mm. It would be a shame to, I can only assume he got screwed, but, I don't mean to bring it down to that level, but
man, you're bumming me out.
I'm sorry, man. It's not cool. I know. No, a lot of those guys that were part of the satellite era of Justice League, or that reboot, so to speak, of the Avengers with the getting rid of the A-list guys, bringing in the B-list guys. Those people did not fare well. In terms of royalties, and here we are talking about him. And it's like, this is a guy who formed your impression of what a lot of these characters look like. Avengers, Justice League for me. So, good choice, man. Now I got to go look at my essentials and my.
I know. I want to dig through. I want to reread Atlantis Chronicles. And,
oh yeah, absolutely.
Dig that one out.
I know, I gotta find it.
Yes. Yes. It's a good one. It is a good one, from what I remember. And
I want to pick up the new Ruse Mini. You reminded me to get that now. Thank you.
Yeah, I think it's in trade already.
Well, there you go. I don't have to look that hard then.
Excellent.
Actually, I can find out real quick.
The magic of computers.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it will be out. Yeah, it came out October, the 5th.
Oh, so it's just out. Okay.
Yeah, it just came out this month. 11/24 on Amazon.
All right.
Excellent.
Once again, having to spend money because of this podcast. Thanks a lot.
Yes, I know. Hey, that's what I'm saying.
All these hopes and dreams that we get lots of free stuff by doing the podcast.
Well, I'm working on that. I'm actually going to talk to the crap. Where the hell are they? The the Comics Podcast Network about joining their list of podcasts. They have a very large amount of them, and after I had to wait till we had at least 10 in the can, and then we just got, now we're up to 12, so actually 13, can just count to zero, so we'll get on there, and that way we'll have a little bit more exposure, maybe.
Cool.
Going legit.
Yep. So
part of the collective that I talked about earlier.
Yes, exactly.
See, you will be a unionist.
Yes. So anyway, coming soon. Look for us on there, and I'll post info about that when that happens on the Facebook page and the other. And speaking of that, ways you can contact us: there's the email at podcast@talesfromthelongbox.com. There's the Facebook group. Just do a search in the searchy box for us on there. You can do on the actual website, talesfromthelongbox.com. We're the only one. You won't miss us on there. So just let us know what you think. Of course, there's iTunes comments. Still don't have one of those, and I'm completely heartbroken. So anybody does that, maybe you win a nice little prize. I think I have like a piece of gum or something around here that you can have.
Excellent.
So, yeah, there you go. Yeah, exactly. I might maybe Marvel Pez dispenser or something. I don't know. So let us know what you think, and join the conversation and all that good stuff. I totally stole that. I didn't come up with that myself. So I just.
It's copyrighted by Paul French.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, That's about it for this episode. Anything else, guys?
No, I think that's it for me.
Alrighty.
I'm going to go eat some candy.
Yeah, candy. Anyway, all right. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Are we still recording?
Yes.
How about now? Are we still recording now?